It's today on The Roundtable, we're discussing what it's like to be a former. Someone whose activities today are habitually framed with the tag, former this or that. So we've assembled a formidable panel of formers. Each was once a member of an extremist or criminal group, but they left and now devote themselves to helping others. So what's it like living with the label former? If you're a former or you know one, this former chaser and former boy would love to hear from you via the text line. The number is 0418 226 576, or of course you can text from within the ABC Listen app. So do preconceived ideas make it more difficult for people who've left pasts that they wanted to move on from to create a new identity? What supports out there? What works best for those who embark on the long road out of extremism? We welcome to the round table this morning Mubeen Sheikh, who is Professor of Public Safety at Seneca College. Mubeen was once a jihadist and Islamic extremist, but then became a counter-terrorism agent for the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. Welcome, Mubeen.
Thank you for having me, Australia.
It's great to have you. We're also welcome Matthew Quinn, founder and CEO of Exit Australia New Zealand, a non-profit that helps people leave extremist groups. Matthew is a former Australian Army infantry soldier, but also the former leader of a white supremacist gang. Welcome, Matthew.
Yeah, g'day, Julian.
And hello also to Mahmoud Fazal, who is a freelance investigative journalist currently working with Radio National's Background Briefing. Mahmoud was once the sergeant-at-arms for the Mongols Outlaw Motorcycle Gang. So that's a fairly unusual CV twist for the Background Briefing team, I would have thought, Mahmoud.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, look, we shouldn't make presumptions. But great to have you on the round table this morning. I'd like to start by asking each of you how you became a former. Tell us about a little about your former life and whether, looking back, there was a single moment when you became a former, or was it maybe a more of a slow burn? Perhaps we could start with you, Mahmoud.
For me, it was actually a really violent feud that was occurring on the streets of Melbourne. I lost several friends to really brutal gang violence, essentially. I lost something like three friends in the space of 2 years. It wasn't a single moment, but it wasn't exactly a slow burn. It was several really traumatic and tragic instances that made me realize that this was something I didn't really want. I think death gave me an opportunity to reevaluate what my purpose is, and instead of being destructive, I wanted to contribute and work upon the problems that young people in my face, in my community, were facing.
Thanks very much for telling us about that, Mahmoud. Perhaps I could come to you now, Mubeen. When do you sort of track the beginning of your movement to becoming a former? What was your previous life like, and how did you transition?
Yeah. By the way, it is a really good panel you've assembled, because you'll see that there are going to be overlaps in all of our journeys. For me personally, I had gone through this period of radicalization from 1995. I kept that up. I got married in 1998. That did kind of calm me down a little bit. But it was the 9/11 attacks that really made me reconsider my commitment to the cause. I just could not comprehend how it would be permissible to, fly planes into buildings, non-combatant targets. And so that's when I basically, that was a one big push. But incrementally, there were some things that happened. Me, of course, getting married, me having my first son, and then, of course, the 9/11 attacks.
And then when 9/11 happened, how quickly did things change for you, and how did you go about making the change, Mubeen?
The day that it happened, was a very busy day. All of us are watching the events on TV. They're being replayed and repeated on TV. So we're all, reinforcing that trauma of that day. And I just built and built that day. And I just thought to myself, really, it's because I grew up without, knowing Arabic and having formally studied Islamic studies. I decided actually that, this can't be. Like, I need to study my religion more deeply. And so I would actually leave Canada and move to Syria in 2002, So this is before the war, so it's not weird to travel to Syria at that time. I went to Syria, spent 2 years there studying Arabic and Islamic studies, and came to relinquish my interpretations because I could see that they were not actually founded on scripture.
Yeah, really interesting to hear as well that moving to live and study in Syria was a part of your de-radicalization. That's fascinating and obviously critical to the major transition in your life. Thanks very much, Mabeen. If I could move on to you now, Matthew Quinn. How did it happen for you? Is there a moment you look back on as the moment where you became a former?
Yeah, I guess for me, the big thing was a bit of a physical wake-up where I was being beaten by a local gang, and a guy from the community that we hated actually came in and saved me from it.
Really?
So, that was probably like a big wake-up call for me, but, you know, it took time with a reflection and things like that.
Yeah, was it shocking for you to experience that kindness from somebody who presumably you would have harboured hate for otherwise?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like a massive, you know, like someone hit me, you know, with something else.
Yeah.
To like wake me up, you know, like get out of this, you know, get out of what you're believing.
And did it have an instant effect on you?
No, it didn't. It took me time. I had to like reflect on it. You know, and I kind of thought like maybe this guy was just someone out of the box that was different to everyone else in that community. Mm. But, you know, I reflected and met other people, reconnected with some old friends, and they took me into the city and met other cultures and stuff like that, which were outside my bubble.
Mm.
And, just slowly realized that I had to go back, actually, and pull apart my group that I'd set up, you know, because I was worried about those guys going forward and just continuing what I'd started.
Mm, that's really interesting. And so how long would you say the process was from that, traumatic event in so many ways to when you were sort of fully emerged and a sort of a new person and looking to chart a different path, Matt?
Oh, I think, to start charting a different path was probably about 6 months. But I think, you know, to the point where I was actually, in there, pulling apart the group, it was probably about a year and a half.
Mabeen Mahmood, does that sort of time frame resonate with either of you?
For me, it was really after the third death, which was a really close friend of mine.
Right.
Yeah, following that, it was almost instant. It was I knew straight away. I think at the day of the funeral, I was sure that even though a lot of my friends from the club attended that funeral, I knew I was never going to see them again.
Mm.
It all kind of came crystal clear at that moment that I had to do something better for the young people who also attended that funeral that day. I had to lead a different example because in many ways they would look up to guys like me in the neighborhood, and I didn't want them to be bringing, you know, young boys from my community to funerals. You know, I wanted to show them that there was more to life than this.
And perhaps I could come to you now, Mabeen Sheikh, and I'll just mention that we're speaking with Mabeen Sheikh, who's Professor of Public Safety at Seneca College. Mabeen, I'd be interested to know how you'd sort of describe your relationship with that tag, former. Is it something that you embrace? Is it an unavoidable burden or something else?
Yeah, just quickly, if I can jump on the previous question about the time that it takes, and for everybody it is different. When there's, of course, it's accelerated when there's a death involved.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest wake-up call you can get, of course. But for those of us, I didn't go through a severe thing like that. So it took about a year as well. Like, once you decide that you want to turn away from it, the subsequent months are going to be filled with you just second-guessing your whole life all over again, basically. And so that does really accelerate, you know, at least start that de-radicalization process. This question right now about, you know, the label, you know, at the start I was kind of like bothered by it because it's like I'm more than just a former.
Yeah.
You don't want to be like typecast in a way and forever be known as that. But my problem was is that by flipping sides, going from the dark side to the Jedi, it created a whole new identity for me now. Now I was this undercover agent, and when it became public, obviously, you know, people don't like undercovers, of course, because they get people caught. But, you know, first it was when I was the extremist, everyone was, you know, I mean, I had a lot of friends and everything was cool. But then when I became the agent, it was like I got shunned. So it was.
How long were you an undercover agent for, Mabin?
About 2 years. 2 years actually undercover. Not much. Mm-hmm. I just got a taste of it. But then I spent 4 years in court supporting the prosecution of, 11 aspiring terrorists who got caught in the plot. But I, you know what, I've embraced the label. I try to attach my new self to that label. So I realize that if people are going to always call me about my former identity, I will make sure to plug in, you know, what I'm doing now and how I've basically matured and grown since then, just like I'm doing now.
Thank you very much for doing that as well. If I could come to you, Matthew Quinn. Matthew's the founder and CEO of Exit Australia New Zealand. How would you describe your relationship with that tag former, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, professionally, I don't mind it, you know, like amongst like academics and other people in the field, like in the CVE field. Mm. But, you know, like when it's like raised, I kind of feel like it takes me back to like, you know, where I was at that time where I just got out. So I don't really like it. And I kind of find it a little derogatory, like for other people that get out, because when people like talk about them, they're just talking about them as a former instead of like, hey, this is someone that's gone through this traumatic lived experience, you know, and that's something that we should explore.
Yes, indeed. And so, from your perspective, does the constant harking back to the way things were for you actually make the process of personal change harder?
Well, it doesn't for me because I'm well out of it, but I think it does for the individuals that are involved that are like going through that process of getting out. You know, it just keeps on taking them back to that point where they first got out and the memories of that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Matt. Yeah. What about you, Mahmood? How do you feel about that tag former?
I mean, I think at the beginning it worked in my favor when I was when I got a job at Vice. I think it was largely because I was a former biker. They gave me a column to write as to write about crime that was happening in Australia from the lens of a former bikie. So it worked in my favor. But then everything after that, I think wrestling with that has been kind of wrestling with that tag has been inspiring for me because I've had to, you know, earn my stripes through my work, and hopefully allow my work to kind of contrast that tag. And I kind of think about it in that way. I use it as a tool to kind of energize my work and really try and put out the best work that I can that is, you know, completely foreign to being a former bikie or something.
I'm interested to sort of delve a little bit deeper into the sort of sense of self that you have when you've had such a profound transformation in your life. Mahmood, you've said something really poignant in a TED talk that you gave where you said there's something scary about being the same person before and after the fact. Could you just expand on that a little for us?
Yeah, it's really difficult because I look back on my former self and it appears in my memory like this kind of strange distant acquaintance, but knowing, trying to grapple with your past and what you've done, or you know what you were responsible for, is something that follows you no matter where you go. Mm. I mean, a lot of therapy has gone into me grappling with that exact notion. Is that, you know, I am the same person before and after the fact, but I'm still kind of grappling with it.
Yeah, obviously it's such a huge process to undertake. If I could take that to you, Mabin Sheikh, could you give us some thoughts on how you relate to yourself looking back on who you were at that time?
Yeah, that's it's weird because on one side it is like it is a former life, right? It is that you kind of see it in your memory because you've made the cognitive shift, right? You think a new way now in this new self. So that when you look at that former self, you appreciate that there was a time where you were thinking completely different. And you can kind of look at that, almost objectively. Like, you can look back on it. You have hindsight bias, so you can also see where you went wrong or why you thought this or why you were going through that. So it is a totally different world in one sense. But actually, I'm interested in what you just said right now with Mahmood about you're the same person when you come out, because you are, right? You're not a different person. You've matured. Your thinking is different, but you're still you. And, you know, when you were saying, I mean, I think this is one of the, you know, things you wanted to discuss anyway in terms of what people go through. But I'll tell you, I remember staring at myself in the mirror a lot when I was going through this stuff and really looking at my physical self in the mirror and, like, really trying to reshape myself into a new way, which, you know, resonated with me and I was still able to, you know, keep going with, right? Because sometimes you get people who go to other extremes where they're leaving a really difficult situation and they might just, like, really turn to another kind of extreme. It could be substance abuse, you know, depression. It could be, like, harmful new selves. And so I think it's important for people to know, even those who are listening, who you might not think about it now. You might think this is all, you know, full of poop. But there will come a time when you pass through the looking glass, when you will hear these ideas and they will impact you at another time. Maybe not right now, but it does dawn on you when you mature that, hey, yeah, this guy said this and this guy said that. So,
Thanks very much. Matt, Quinn, if I can come back to you, could you give us your thoughts on, like, your sense of self as you've gone through this process?
Yeah, you know, with the others on going back to that same person, I remember when I was younger, like, before I got involved in this group, like, I always wanted to actually be, like, a peacekeeper. And, you know, and then I had, like, all these traumas and things happen and started this group and just went to that dark side of the world. But coming out and doing a good 10 years of solid therapy, I'm just back to the person that I am, you know, and, like, I'm now doing the work that I am and trying to and find that peace for others, you know. So.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And Matt, I'd like to move on to something that you alluded to earlier, that part of your transformation process was not sort of separating yourself completely from your former associates. You felt like you had a bit of a sense of mission to go back to them and to try and change their minds as well. I imagine that one of the really complicated things of being a former is your relationship with people who aren't formers yet. Could you tell us a little bit about your experiences there and what you've learnt from your work as the CEO of Exit Australia?
Yeah, I mean, so going back to the group was pretty difficult, you know. Like, obviously, like, there was a couple of guys in there that were pretty angry and wanted to sort of, like, take over the leadership all the time. So I just decided, like, I thought about all the different ways I could go back to end it, and I was just like, best way was to actually put the guys up against each other. Instead of going in with discussion of, like, the group's coming down, I just, you know, manipulated the guys and put them up against each other, and then that way I was able to separate them and work on them one by one.
Interesting.
Yeah, get them all out, and they're all off doing their careers that they're doing.
So overall, has that process been successful? Would most of your former associates now be fully in the former camp like yourself?
No, like, most of them, like, they get out by themselves. They don't really go back to the groups. You know, like, they just see that they're going towards violence and just raise their hand and say that they don't want to go down that path. So for more them, it's more of a singular event. But, like, it is used sometimes with other groups, that you can kind of use that same strategy to make other groups, you know, pull themselves apart. So difficult work.
Indeed, indeed. Let's come back to you, Mahmood Fazal. Mahmood's a former sergeant-at-arms for the Mongols Outlaw Motorcycle Gang, but now freelance investigative journalist and currently working with Radio National's Background Briefing team. Mahmood, I can only imagine that relations with your former fellow Mongols was pretty complicated. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was and it wasn't. I mean, they knew what I'd endured in the previous few years, and so they were okay with me leaving. It was kind of mutual, and There was no bad blood, which is quite rare because essentially what I was doing is leaving a family. That's what happens with these motorcycle clubs, is that you have to earn your way into a family, and that's the way the dynamic of that relationship is. So you, when you leave, you're basically abandoning the family. So it was tricky. I mean, moving into journalism was again tricky because and then writing about crime specifically, because I had to essentially confront them with various truths that they probably refuse to recognize, you know, because they live in a very particular reality where good and bad are defined by certain things, and we live in a different reality where we think some things are good and some things are bad, and they fit our scales or whatever. So I got a bit of backlash for some of that as a kind of traitor. I'm sure there's members of the club that really hate me, but there's some that have reached out to me that really like the work that I'm doing. So it's all an individual kind of thing.
Thanks very much. We've had an interesting text in from Ian, who says, I'm not a former, but also I'm not like my father. As the son of my father, I was labelled as his son, and it was assumed I'd be like him. The gossip was always believed. I think that's an interesting bridge to discussing relationships with family and friends, people who presumably you've been become more distant from in some cases when you've been down the extremist path. Mabeen Sheikh, could you talk to us a little bit about the importance of re-establishing relationships with family and friends, or to the extent to which that's possible sometimes?
Yeah, I guess it depends on which friends, and it depends on what you've also done to damage those relationships. So for me, excommunicated, you know, so many of my family when I was, in an extreme mindset. Yeah. You know, I was like, oh, my parents are sinners because of what they're doing. They're doing it all wrong. I told my grandmother that she was going to go to hell. You know, I laugh, but it's so stupid. Yeah. But that's what I was doing at the time. And, Now, since of course I'm on the Jedi side, things are much, much better, much better. So it is incredibly important to your soul. Never mind, you know, just even your religious teachings, right? The Ten Commandments, honor your mother and your father. So it is incredibly important to make right with your immediate family members, especially the parents.
There's only a couple of minutes left, unfortunately, in this fascinating discussion about being a former. Matthew Quinn, if I could come to you, you work as the CEO of Exit Australia New Zealand, helping people leave extremist groups. What things would you point to as the most important points of helping others to begin that process?
Just even with that text message you said you just received, you know, it's like one of my clients was actually like that. He was like a son of a former. Mm. And because he was labelled with it so much by people in the community, that actually pushed him into violent extremism. So I guess the biggest thing is, like, you know, there's that whole thing around shame and reputation for people, you know, that they worry about connecting with individuals that are involved in these kind of groups. But what people need to know is that these people are really vulnerable, even though if they're, like, exerting that they're, these powerful sort of alpha males and pushing their extremism, like, inside they're completely vulnerable. Hmm. And it's just reaching out to them and finding ways that you can find, like, ways to support them and include them in the community is really the strongest thing. You know, it's, you don't actually have to immediately change their mindset unless it's, you know, they're talking about terrorism or something like that. But just bringing them in and including them will help them get out.
Hmm. Well, look, unfortunately, we're gonna have to leave it there because it's been a fascinating discussion. So thank you, one and all, for being part of the roundtable today. Professor Mabeen Sheikh, thank you very much for joining us from Canada.
Thank you, Australia.
Great speaking with you, Mubeen, is Professor of Public Safety at Seneca College, former jihadist and Islamic extremist, but also former counter-terrorism agent. Thanks very much to you also, Matthew Quinn.
Thanks, Julian.
And Matthew's the founder and CEO of Exit Australia New Zealand, a not-profit that helps people to leave extremist groups. And thanks also to you, Mahmoud Fazal, now part of the Radio National Background Briefing investigative journalism team. Thanks, Mahmoud.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, great having all of you on board for our roundtable discussion today, and of course that'll be up on the web with all our other stories for Sunday Extra. Thanks very much to the Sunday Extra producing team, Sky Doherty, Chris Bullock, Isabel Summerson and Jen Parsonage. This is Julian Morrow. I'll look forward to speaking to you next Sunday.